Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Yep, he's done it again, folks.
Oh, no, not again. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third year in a row.
It's not the first time. It won't be the last.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging around with me today. Rich Galen is our guest. Rich is our good friend and the editor of the outstanding thrice-weekly cyber column, Mullings.com. He's a political operative, and he is of the Republican persuasion in the interest of full disclosure. And many of you have seen him, his head on, as one of the talking heads and many of the network shows and cable shows on television and day and night, early morning, late at night. Whenever they ask him, he goes there. He's our good friend. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, my friend. Good to be with you.
It's good to have you back. Rich, before we get into some of the typical politics stuff that we talk about, there's a couple of things that I wanted to point out that in the area of business that I wanted to get your comments on. You know, we had the corporate malfeasance episodes a few years ago, the WorldCom, the Enron, Tyco, et cetera, Adelphia, and all those.
And the Sarbanes-Oxley.
Exactly, which produced Sarbanes-Oxley, which, folks, was a bill that was passed in 90 days. And I wrote an article in those days, Rich, and I said, ladies and gentlemen, buckle your seatbelts, gird your loins, because anything the government does in 90 days can't be good. And I was right. And now that we're inheriting that whirlwind because the United States is less competitive because of the extra onerous things that are being put on not only big businesses, but it's filtering down to small businesses. And this week, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and others are encouraging the SEC and the government to fix Sarbanes-Oxley. And I hope they do, Rich. I don't know what's going to happen, but I hope they do.
Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen. Nothing, because this is you know, we always say elections have consequences, and this is going to be one of them. That I think there would have been a better chance of the necessary adjustments being made had Republicans still controlled one of the two houses of Congress, if not both. But with the Democrats I'm not being ugly about this. This is just the nature of the beast. That the chances of Democrats, especially in the early days of their majority,
right,
doing anything which the unions and the base voters in the Democratic Party might perceive as being favorable to the, quote, big corporations or big corporate America is approximately zero.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. But the only reason why I thought maybe there might be a little bit of hope is because one of the champions of this change is Schumer of New York.
Yeah, well, except that Barney Frank's got to do it on the other side, and that's
right.
Not going to happen.
Well, and you mentioned unions. You helped me lurch uncontrollably to my next topic, Rich, which is...
This is why I'm such a good guest.
That's right. You're like the king of lurching uncontrollably, and me being the king of Segway, it works perfectly, and that is what's called, incorrectly, folks, the Employee Free Choice Act, which is the bill that passed the House last week. But we don't think it'll pass the Senate, and the president says he won't sign it.
Right.
But folks, this is where employees of companies will be required to fill out a form, a postcard kind of thing, in front of other people, not a secret ballot on whether they want to organize or not. Now, here's the irony. Here's the interesting part that has come to light this week, Rich. The Wall Street Journal reported that about, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, Mexico was thinking about doing this very same thing. And dozens of lawmakers from the United States lectured Mexico on this topic, wrote them a letter and said, you can't do this. The secret ballot is the way of life. It's the essence of liberty, blah, blah, blah. You know, they were waving the flag and on their in their pulpits and lecturing and pontificating to Mexico, you should be doing this. Well, of the members of Congress that signed that letter, one of them being a lead letter signer, 11 of them are still in the House, and all 11 of them are now have now voted for the Employee Free Choice Act, which does the opposite of what they were lecturing Mexico about.
And you're surprised at this because...
Well, I'm not surprised. No, you're right. I'm not surprised, I think we got to point it out.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. I got an email from a reader a couple of days ago about this and said, you know, what do you think about this, you know, the John Sweeney, the president of the AFL-CIO, sitting in meetings where this bill was being drafted. I said, you know, fair is fair. I mean, when Republicans controlled the Congress, the Chamber of Commerce was sitting in there. So, as I said, you know, this when people think it doesn't make any difference, it does make an difference.
Elections matter. You've taught us that for a long time. Stand by, Rich. Quick break. We got some more stuff coming up. Very interesting discussions that we'll have with our good friend Rich Galen. Right after these messages, 20 till, I'm Jim Blassingame. Here's Robert Cray to take us out. There's that little band from Texas, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. It's 17 till the hour. Rich Galen is our guest. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'm your host. Rich, give us your website, please.
www.mullings, M as in Mary, U-L-L-I-N-G-S. com.
And he did win at least one spelling bee, didn't you, Rich?
I did. It was in third grade, and I was 21.
And that's exactly. Yeah, he only graduated because he was going to get tenure, ladies and gentlemen. And that's the thrice weekly cyber column that you want to check out. I have to warn you, it's of the Republican persuasion. He spins to the right, but if you like that sort of thing, you'll enjoy it. If you don't like that sort of thing, you want to see what he's up to. Rich, I want to quickly talk about something that has been talked about quite a bit, and that's the Scooter Libby, the iScooter Libby jury verdict, which came through last week where he was found guilty of perjury. Okay, you're not supposed to lie to a grand jury. Right. There's no question about that. But the fact remains, Rich, and you correct me if I'm wrong, And we now know this. We didn't know this until like a couple of months ago. But the special prosecutor in this case, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm assuming everybody knows that Libby was the guy who was accused of outing Valerie Plame as a CIA operative, in order to discredit her husband Wilson. And I won't go into all the weeds on that. But the point is, Rich, apparently the special prosecutor knew before he even brought the case, before he even interviewed Libby, he knew that Libby wasn't the leaker.
Yes, right. He knew that it was a guy named Richard Armitage, who at the time was the deputy secretary of state. In Washington, there's a secretary, there's one deputy secretary. Then under that, there's a bunch of undersecretaries, then about 100 assistant secretaries. So he was the number two guy in the State Department. He told Fitzgerald, or Fitzpatrick, whatever his name is, Patrick Fitzgerald. I can never remember if it's Patrick Fitzgerald or Gerald Fitzpatrick. He told Fitzgerald early on that he inadvertently had told Novak about this, and he was not... He's not a Cheney type of pro-war,
right,
let's go shoot somebody kind of
guy.
He's
not a neocon.
No, at all. And he said publicly, Armitage did, that Fitzgerald asked him not to tell anybody else, probably ordered him not to tell anybody else. And this is what happens with special prosecutors all the time. Look, go all the way back to Bill Clinton. The special prosecutor there could have easily said to Clinton's lawyer way back when, who was, by the way, hired to look into Whitewater, had nothing to do with Monica Lewinsky.
Right.
But that's what always happens. In the course of these investigations, something else pops up, and because they have a need to, as we say, put a scalp on the wall, they get permission to drift off into these other areas rather than somebody saying, no, is there a Whitewater issue or not a Whitewater issue? If you find something else, then we'll start with a new guy. But they never do that. So we ended up with that whole business with Clinton. With Newt Gingrich, the same thing. He was a special prosecutor, was hired to see if he had violated tax law, which he did not, and ended up making him pay a $300,000 fine for answering the same question two different ways. Literally, mm-hmm. that was what it was. And now we have this. I mean,
we wonder why good people don't go into politics.
Oh, you know, why would you put your family through Scooter Libby? Yeah. I don't know Scooter, but I have a lot of friends who do know him, and he is just a terrific guy. He's very smart, great writer, a very good lawyer, who has devoted the last 6 years of his life to public service in the vice president's office. And, you know, he's spending millions of dollars that he does not have on a defense that he shouldn't have to defend. I mean, on a charge he should never have to defend.
The debate now is whether Bush should pardon him now or should he wait? What do you think?
He should have done it in January. I wrote a column on January, I think, 11th, saying that the president should pardon him before the thing even gets started.
He should have stopped the whole thing right now. Just get it over with.
Yeah, the issue is that a pardon carries the presumption of guilt.
Yeah.
And my understanding is that some of his team, Libby's team, thought that the case against him was so weak that they would beat it in court.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's been convicted, so now there is already, I mean, there's no presumption of guilt. He is guilty. So I think that the president should pardon him right now, get it over with. I mean, the president's at, 37%, so he can't get any lower.
But you don't think, a lot of people think he should wait until after the 08 elections so that it won't impact the election.
I can't imagine that anybody by November of 08 is going to remember Scooter Libby.
Yeah.
And besides it gives people, it gives Republicans at the House, Senate, and presidential level a chance to disagree with the president without disagreeing with them about the war proper.
Right.
If they want to, or they can say, yeah, let's get in behind us.
The reason I wanted to bring this up, folks, is because regardless of which side of the aisle you're on, everybody ought to see this as a travesty. And it's another reason why and I pointed out a few other cases like this, folks, where it's one of the reasons why people wonder why good people don't go into politics, and a lot of good people don't. And it's one of the reasons why I don't. I don't need this kind of grief. Let's move on and talk about one. Here's an Iraq question I have for you.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm the first one now, Rich, to say that, and I think you are too, that we've made a lot of mistakes in Iraq.
Right.
That a lot of things should have been done differently.
One of them was sending me.
No, I don't think so. But anyway, there are a lot of mistakes have been made in Iraq. But here's my question. If we had not gone into Iraq and everything was just like it was, Saddam was there, Iraq was trucking along, still doing oil for food scandal, all that sort of thing, nothing would have changed about Iran's drive to have nuclear power, nuclear weapons.
No,
so where would we be? So here's my question. Yeah. Where would we be right now if Iran had nuclear weapons? What would Iraq be doing right now? That's the question I want you to answer.
To be continued.
When we come back after these messages, I'm going to ask Rich to answer that question. And then we're going to get him to talk about the presidential candidates, especially the new guys who may be getting in. 10 till. I'm Jim Blasingham. Rich Galen is our guest. His website is mullings.com. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Rich Galen. He is the editor-in-chief of the cyber column Mullings.com, MULLINGS.com. Thrice weekly, folks. I'm a happy subscriber, and I encourage you to go there and check his website out and subscribe to his publication. Rich, one of my predictions for 07 was that there would be a showdown between President Bush of the United States and President Ahmadinejad of Iran over their nuclear program in Iran. And so my question to you as we went to the break was, if we had never gone into Iraq, everything was trucking along there today as it was in January of 2003 in Iraq. But Iran, there's nobody believes that they wouldn't continue to be continuing to work on their nuclear program and their nuclear weapons. Where would we be right now?
I think that I think it's a fairly clear thing. One, you're right about the Iranians continuing their nuclear program. I think that's absolutely clear. But the other piece of it is that there are there's a large body of people who actually know their stuff about this, unlike me, and they believe that if we had never gone into Iraq and removed Saddam, that by now the infamous Anbar province would be the principal training ground for worldwide terrorism, that he would have made a deal with al-Qaeda and all the other related non-Iranian
Because he's Sunni and they're Sunni.
Yeah, and they would have so he would have in effect become the the spring training ground for worldwide terror.
Wouldn't he have also been moving hellbent for leather to get his own nuclear weapons to protect himself from Iran?
Well, we thought that in the first place, and there still is some evidence. I mean, even we were talking about.
I'm not trying to resurrect the weapons of mass destruction thing. I'm saying in the meantime, in the last 3 years, he would have been trying to do that.
Well, because if only because the Iranians and the Iraqis, remember, fought a 10-year war.
Right.
And the Iraqis could not have afforded to allow Iran to get ahead of them in nuclear weapons and thereby threaten them.
Where would we be if so they're we would, both? Never mind Al Qaeda. Where would we be if Iran and Iraq were facing off with nuclear weapons right now?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. It would be like Pakistan and India.
And India, right?
Which George Carlin once said, because everybody believes in reincarnation in those two countries, there's really no downside risk.
But I mean, I'm serious. I think history will bear this out. And I'm not trying to defend anybody or make the case for the war or anything. I'm just saying that I think that we've got to step back and look at this thing from a historical standpoint. Rich, let's change subjects and talk about the presidential candidates. I saw Fred Thompson on Fox News this week.
Right.
He did a good job in sort of announcing that he might be somehow possibly interested in running for president.
Yeah, I think he is somehow possibly interested. He's got a lot of skills. People forget, but he was a staff lawyer on the Watergate committee way back when.
Right. He's got the credentials.
Yeah, oh yeah. Was an actor. Is an actor. Was a United States senator. I said on TV yesterday, he not only plays a lawyer on TV, but he's one in real life.
He is one, right.
and he
didn't even stay in the Holiday Inn Express. now, there was an interesting thing with Hegel. Chuck Hegel, who is the weirdest, got to be the weirdest politician in America today, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm right with you.
And he's because he's such a conservative, and yet he's vehemently. I mean, he's in the face of George Bush over Iraq, and he acts like a Democrat over Iraq. But he sort of almost didn't announce yesterday.
Well, something happened. I mean, we'll know more about that as reporters dig into it. The issue is that Hegel told everybody on Thursday last week that he was going to have a big announcement in Omaha on Monday. So people flew out there, about 15 cameras. It was a big deal. And he comes out on stage and says that he's here to announce that he and his family will talk about this over the next few months and decide what to do. Well, nobody does that. So the presumption is that something happened probably on Sunday.
Right.
Either somebody called or...
They showed up with pictures or something.
Yeah, exactly right. something happened. It was too late to cancel the thing.
Right.
But so he had to stand out there and look like the idiot that I truly believe he is.
Quickly, Rich, what about McCain? Is his star falling?
I don't think that's the case. I think they made the threshold decision, the strategic decision, not to change their timetable. And they truly believe that this is a long haul, and they're going to let Giuliani just burn himself out.
Let him peak if he wants to.
I'm sorry?
Let him peak if he wants to. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And and McCain will still be there.
Look around, folks, for Thompson and Gingrich, though.
Yeah, Gingrich is
waiting in the wings. They're holding. I think they're smart. Hey,
and
Rich,
on
thanks.
The other side, Al Gore.
Yeah. That's the scary part. Stand by, Rich. We got to go. Actually, give us your website one more time.
Mullings.com.
Thank you, Rich, for being here. Good job today.
Thank you.
Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and every member of our military around the world.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.